Well, I add my greetings. Are you awake? I always worry about the 3 o'clock session. If any of you finish before I do, I understand that. Appreciate you being here. How many of you were here yesterday, just so I'll know how big this review should be? Looks like pretty big. we'll do some of this. We talked a lot yesterday about people who struggle with people, problems, or pain in their hearts. That's kind of the P words that I use to sort of sum this up. Talking about emotional pain, wounds that we have in our hearts, maybe from really, really serious stuff, maybe from not terribly serious stuff, but still stuff that hurts us. And I have come to realize that the hurts that we have inside of us cause us to do things we really shouldn't do. Sometimes very sinful things, sometimes just sort of stupid things, sometimes just not helpful things. And I compare it sometimes to having a rock in your shoe. If you got a rock in your shoe, it's going to be hurting, and it's also going to make you walk funny. And you might not realize you've got a rock in your shoe, but after a while your hip starts to hurt, and you start trying to figure out what's going on with all of that, and maybe you can make the connection. But you're not going to get any better until you get the rock out of your shoe. And I think it's kind of that way with us and our hearts, that there's stuff in our hearts that hurts us, and we're not going to get better until we take care of that. Sometimes it comes out as struggles with people and relationships. I think a lot of times the way it affects us is it affects our relationships, just all kinds of problems, or maybe we're aware that there's actual pain. What we really need to solve the thing is God. Isaiah's call, or God's call through Isaiah in chapter 55, come all who are thirsty, come to the waters. You who have no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without cost. Why spend money on what is not bread and your labor on what does not satisfy? I've spent a lot of money on stuff that is not bread, stuff that I thought would fill that little empty spot, that would take care of that little yearning, but it didn't. And I confessed yesterday, I keep trying enchiladas. It's as if we're created with an enchilada-shaped vacuum in our hearts. You know, that's kind of how I act sometimes. But you keep spending money on what is not bread, and that won't take care of it. What you have to do is come to the waters and drink. You have to have God. Oh God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul yearns for you. My soul thirsts for you. My body yearns for you in a dry and weary land where there is no water. What we yearn for is God. And that's what will help us, and that's what will help other people with the pain that they have in their hearts. I think if we come to understand this dynamic about people hurting inside and that affecting their lives and making them not live quite right, there is a tremendous opportunity for evangelism there. Now, I've got a good friend down in San Antonio that does these. I put the shell of the PowerPoint together. He makes it look nice. And I said, we need a picture here of evangelism. And he kind of went old school on me. But what you don't realize is that this is actually the next door neighbor whose son was just in the hospital and you're going over to check on them. This is not cold turkey door knocking. But if we know that we've got a neighbor who's hurting because they're concerned because their son is in the hospital, there's a great opportunity for evangelism there because people want help with their pain if they're aware of it. And if they're not aware of it, they're probably aware of some adverse effects of the things that they do to try to take care of that pain, and they need some help with their lives. On Tuesday, I sat in the playground of our church outdoors at a picnic table bench and talked to this lady that's been visiting our church. And she said she grew up going to some other kind of church. And she's got 2 children by 2 different fathers. She was living with the one and had a child. They broke up. And then she moved in with this other guy trying to rescue him. And they were about to break up. She found out she was pregnant. He starts staying out late, drinking, comes home three or four nights a week, like at 2 o'clock in the morning. One night she says, I'm going to get him back. And so the minute he got home, she went out and drank with her friends for a little bit, starts driving home, speeding home, gets pulled over, DWI, threat to her career, all this stuff going on. And she says, I feel bad, you know, coming back to church now when all these things are going on. And I said, well, sometimes it takes stuff like that for us to shatter the illusion of independence and help us realize how much we need God. Problems will do that. Problems hurt. You know, there's pain and there's hurt, but they do make us aware of our need for God. And so there's a great opportunity for evangelism having to do with the pain that people have in their hearts. If we understand that and if we know how to respond to it and if we care about it. And I think some of us at least should consider developing ministries that are addressed specifically to the matter of pain in people's hearts. And I want to mention three that I know of, and there are others. Have any of you ever heard of Celebrate Recovery? It comes out of Saddleback. It's a huge program. They have books. They've got a Bible. They've got tapes. They've got DVDs. I have one of their main books over there that some of you might be able to look at after if you want to. I tried really hard. I told the people yesterday that I'm not very good at this because I'm a perfectionist. And if it's not just perfect, I don't like it. And so normally I would say, well, I'm writing my own material. I tried really hard to find other people's material that I could use for this, but I just couldn't do it. And part of the reason why is I'm not real comfortable with the way they use Scripture sometimes. They do the sinner's prayer thing, which I don't believe in, kind of expect that. But there were some other things, too, where they, you know, it just didn't sound right to me. And they also say, we don't want you to change our materials if you use them. So I kind of didn't feel real good to go with that. There's another program I've heard about. Can y'all read that? It's called Picking Up the Pieces. It's done by a guy named Chuck Hannaford. I have their basic book over there on the table, too, if you want to take a look at it. It's got some good stuff in it. This is a training book here, and we're using that for some of the training that we're doing. But what we ended up doing is developing our own program, and it's still a long way from being perfect. And I'm calling it LifeQuest, and I'm not pushing this program. I'm not sure God wants us to be doing this program. Before, that wouldn't have mattered. Okay, that's a confession. Before, if I got a good idea, I'd just plow through with it as long as I could plow. I'm trying to be a little more sensitive to that now, praying about it a lot. I see some good things happening. I see some discouraging things happening. But I'm trying to be open about whether God wants us to be doing this or not. Our tagline is Journey Toward Wholeness of Life and Relationships. I do believe that it is a journey. It's not the kind of thing where you just get fixed. One girl, the very first night, was going to a group that was a different group from her friend, and she said to her friend, see you when I'm fixed. Well, you know, one group's not going to do that. It's a journey. And we use stones as a metaphor. And we talk especially about touchstones. I don't know if you know what a touchstone is that you use to determine the genuineness of a metal. And instead of the 12 steps you hear about sometimes, we've got our own little steps, but we call them touchstones. And we call them that because they kind of test the genuineness of where we're at on the journey. And also, with a little bit of a stretch, they become stepping stones to lead us on the journey. And the material that I gave you is a sample of that. Some of the things that we're trying to do in LifeQuest to help people is create an atmosphere where people feel loved and accepted, because if they're going to heal, they're going to need a place where they are accepted. We have the opportunity to build some good relationships. If you've got pain in your heart, there's a good chance that one of the things that it does to you is hurt your relationships. Maybe by making you a people pleaser to the point that you drive everybody crazy. Maybe by making you an island where you don't want to have anything to do with anyone. Maybe by making you critical of everybody else where you can't keep a friendship. But we want it to be a place where you can develop some good, healthy relationships. The thing you're holding in your hand is a travel guide. That's code for homework. They get one of those every week, and they're asked to go home and read it. And if you page through it a little bit, there's some exercises and questions and Bible verses. It's not heavy-duty Bible study because it's designed with outreach in mind, but the Bible is introduced in that, and the gospel is introduced in that. At 7 o'clock, we meet as a big group, maybe about this size, and we'll have about 30 minutes where I'll talk about one of these basic touchstone principles, or maybe somebody will get up in front of the group and tell their story. Those are some pretty powerful things. We have a book table with several resources on it. I've got a sheet over there that lists the books we put on our book table. So if you're interested in emotional healing kinds of stuff, there's some books there. I called Boyd's books here at the workshop, and they were going to try to get some of those books, but they were not able to do so. I think I called them too late. Prayer is another thing that we do in the groups, and I'll talk a little more about that in a moment. And then kind of the meat of the thing is the journey groups, which are small groups that meet for an hour on every Monday night when we do this. And the travel guide is the basis for the things that we do in those journey groups. But it's not like, what'd you get on number one, what'd you get on number two, what'd you get on number three? It's more like maybe going around the circle and what stood out to you, what got your attention, what are you doing with all of that? That's what we do in those groups. So that's just kind of an overview of that program. All three of these programs that I just mentioned, the picking up the pieces, the celebrate recovery, and the one that we're doing, which is kind of modeled off of those two, use groups. And I think there's a reason for that. I think some really good stuff can happen in groups. Now, there's all kinds of groups with all different kinds of purposes. There's study groups where you just study the Bible. There's fellowship groups where you just have fellowship. There's prayer groups where you just pray. There's worship groups, maybe. That's not the normal setting for that. There's task groups, all different kinds of groups, all different kinds of purposes. But the kind of group that I think is most needed to help people who are emotionally wounded is a group where they have a safe place to talk about what's going on. And we'll expand that a little bit. But essentially, that's what we're trying to do in these groups, is create a safe place where they can talk about what's going on. Some good things that happen in groups are you develop trust. As you hear the guidelines for the groups and as you hear other people share what's going on with them, you begin to develop a lot of trust with the people in your group, and you see that you're not alone. We mentioned yesterday that one of the things that happens when people are hurt or wounded or struggling with something is that there's a tendency for them to pull back and isolate themselves. But if they hear that other people have stuff going on too, they realize they're not so alone, and they draw back into those relationships better. You listen better and you learn better because the people who are talking are going through the same kinds of things. It's not theoretical stuff. It's not somebody getting up and talking about or giving a lesson about something they've never experienced but they've read about. It's rather people sitting in a group as peers talking about something that they've gone through, and so there's better credibility for the things that happen. Getting to the evangelistic part, which is kind of the occasion of all this and the reason that we started this program, people in this kind of group can experience the kindness and love of God. Again, yesterday I mentioned one of the things that people most need when they're wounded emotionally is to be loved. They need kindness. They need love. They need compassion. And if they go to a group like this where there's other people that really understand what it's like to hurt emotionally, then they are going to be very loving and very compassionate, and they're going to be Jesus to the people who are in the group. And so it's a great opportunity for them to experience the kindness and love of God. And people can hear the good news. Eventually, in the messages of the travel guides, there will be a presentation of the gospel. I don't know how you're used to hearing the gospel, but they will hear about how much God loved them and what God did for them and the forgiveness that is available to them. And they have a chance to hear that. So that's how these become evangelistic. And I mentioned yesterday some of our evangelistic stuff is kind of bait and switch, kind of like, I'll do this good deed for you, and then I expect you to hear the gospel. Or maybe it's a sales kind of thing that, you know, the Bible's really down on that kind of stuff. But here, it's like you're hurting and you need help, and God loves you and God can help you. Come be a part of this thing and learn more about that. And then what you actually give them is the thing that will help them with the pain that they're feeling. And so that happens in these groups. It's also a very natural setting for following some of the biblical teachings. And that's not just this kind of group, but a lot of groups. Like confess your sins to one another. You don't have to answer, but when's the last time you confessed a sin to somebody? It seems like we're getting a little better at that than we used to be, but you know, some people would be going, well, 1979, I think I remember mentioning, you know. But if you get in a group where you're kind of all going through the same thing and you develop trust and we're here because we're doing some stupid stuff and we're trying to stop doing stupid stuff, then it's much easier to talk about that. And hand in hand with that is bear one another's burdens. Galatians 6:2 is another thing that happens so well in a group like this where you've developed that rapport. Now, let me stop for just a second and ask you, if you've had a struggle or a problem or something really difficult and you wanted to talk to somebody about it, who would that person be? And think of a name if you can, and I don't want to know the name, but what is it about that person that makes them be the one that you would go talk to about your problem? Let me hear from three or four of you. Okay, they listen to you. Yeah. What else? Yep, they love you. Okay?
Confidential.
They're confidential. It's not going to show up in the bulletin the next week. Okay? Okay, somebody that knows you. Yeah. Okay, they're not going to be real judgmental. Okay? Honest about their own problems. Now, this is incredible. Watch this. Here's what I asked our group, and here's what they said. Somebody who will listen to you, and they added listen actively and listen patiently, not just waiting for their turn to talk, but listen patiently. Listen empathetically. They said you can see it in their face and their eyes. Listening without offering solutions. Non-judgmental, didn't somebody say that? Transparent and open about their own stuff, didn't somebody just say that? Somebody that would just be with you, be present with you, and hold your hand literally or physically, or figuratively. One girl said, I had to make a tough phone call to my ex-husband, and so I called up somebody from my group. They came over and literally held my hand while I made that phone call. And then the striking thing is nobody here and nobody in my group said somebody who freely gives advice. Now, have you been the advice giver in those groups? You're in the group and this person's telling about their problem. Well, you know what you need to do is read the Bible more, or what you need to do is get a haircut or whatever it is, or in one-on-one conversations. A lot of us are fix-it people. You tell me a problem, I want to fix your problem. Part of that, I think, is our personalities. Part of it, I think, is our religion that we don't quite have down right, maybe. But it's just interesting that nobody said the thing that makes them feel especially safe and want to share what's going on is to find somebody that gives advice freely. Now, there's a time for advice, and we'll talk about that a little bit more, but it's not in those groups. Let me get one of these. The sheets that you're giving out. Are you giving these out? On the back, if you got one that's stapled, look on the back, and I think a couple of people need them right here. If you got a single sheet, it's the only thing on your sheet. This is some nuts and bolts that I think are pretty important, and I've kind of gathered this from some different places. These are the guidelines that we use in our journey groups and life quests to try to create a safe place for people to open up about what's going on in their lives. Number one is what's said in the group stays in the group. You don't tell outside the group. Do not share anything you see or hear about people at LifeQuest with anyone else. Following this guideline consistently will help establish the trust and reputation for LifeQuest that is needed for people to feel safe enough to share what's really going on in their lives. The one exception to this is if someone's life is in danger. And I would include in that abuse kinds of situations. And this Chuck Hannaford that I mentioned a while ago says, if something else comes up in the group that you really think needs to be reported, then you talk to that person that said it before the group's over and figure out how you're going to bring it out. In other words, you don't say, well, exception, I'm telling anyway. You go tell the person. And what that does is maintain the integrity of this guideline. I don't know you, and I don't know how you feel, but I do know that one person in our groups put on their evaluation form the consistent harping on this guideline by me almost every Monday night is what really helped them open up, knowing that we were just hammering that. Another interesting thing that somebody told me was, you know, when we first started LifeQuest, it was before daylight savings time. And then at daylight savings time, I felt funny showing up at the building in the daylight. And it didn't strike me that way at all, but that tells you how self-conscious people can be sometimes about what's going on with them and how important it is that we preserve the integrity of it. We've actually considered moving it to Wednesday nights, but some of the discussion was people aren't necessarily comfortable with knowing who all goes to LifeQuest, because if the church knows anything, they know we talk about problems at LifeQuest. Number two, speak for yourself. Share your own thoughts and feelings instead of talking about other people. It's not about what other people do. It's about how you respond to whatever others do. If you must mention another party in order for you to share your thoughts and feelings, please try not to reveal their identity. So it's not a time to get in there and say, well, you know, the main problem with my wife is da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You can talk about, here's how I feel sometimes, but you don't talk about other people. You speak for yourself. Number three, empathize, but don't advise. We are here to support and encourage each other. So please feel free to sensitively express your empathy with others and affirm them in the thoughts and feelings they are sharing. Please also remember that we are not here to fix each other. So in the group, keep your advice to yourself unless it is specifically asked for. If you have advice or concerns to share with someone else, get to know them a little bit before or after your group time, and then sensitively share your thoughts with them at a time other than during the journey group. I'm not saying there's never room for any advice, but advice doesn't make people open up. It makes them shut up, okay? And, you know, we've kind of been answer people, a lot of us, over the years. And so when somebody talks about a problem and we think we can see exactly what they ought to do, it's really hard to sit on our advice. But when you give advice, you're closing people down. What we want to do is open people up. Should have repeated this today, too. I think what happens so often with emotional wounds is we just keep it inside and it festers. And it's not going to get any better because it's festering inside. The first thing that has to happen is people have to open up and be able to talk about their pain and their hurt. And these guidelines are intended to help them do that. Now, once in a while, dare I say, especially in the guys' groups, someone will ask for advice. Am I allowed to say that? Okay, maybe in the girls' groups too. We divide our groups by gender just because there's sometimes some stuff like that that's hard to talk about. But once in a while, somebody will ask for some advice, and we let the group facilitators say, okay, would anybody like to share anything with Larry? And watch Larry, and when his eyes glaze over, you know, you stop it. But otherwise, let two or three people go. And also be sure to mention, now, Larry, you may want to evaluate all that because somebody in the group may have given some really wacky advice, and you don't want him to think that you're endorsing all of that. But if they ask for it, we'll let them, you know, give a little bit. But other than that, what we really want to do is empathize with them. Now, remember the list we made of what makes you open up. somebody that understands and supports and encourages you. That's what we want to do. Number four, everyone needs a turn to talk. Since we are traveling as a group, everyone needs to talk so that they can make progress on the journey. Don't dominate the group discussion time, but don't just sit back and let everyone else do all the talking either. Everyone needs to talk. And in most groups, you got at least one big talker and one little talker or no talker. So every week at LifeQuest, I say, now, how many of you are the big talkers? And this is in the big group before we go to the groups. And usually they know and they'll raise their hands. And I'll say, okay, now you guys remember, you got a lot of good stuff. Hold back, because if you dominate, these other people aren't going to talk. And then I'll tell the group facilitators, you got this dominator. You need to be ready to say, well, let's hear from someone else now. Hint, hint, you know, or some things like that. And then if you've got the maybe the broken, hurt, shy person that won't say anything. Larry, did you have anything you want to say on this at all? And if he says anything at all, you affirm him and encourage him because you're trying to draw him out so that he'll talk about what's going on. Number five, this is not a venting group. Journey group discussions will sometimes include sharing painful feelings and sometimes telling our stories passionately. The primary goal of the group, however, is not venting or catharsis, but rather sharing, learning, and support. Learning to share our feelings in healthy, appropriate ways is an important part of our growth, but uninhibited or profane sharing is neither healthy nor appropriate. There are some movements that encourage you to just get it all out. I think there's some more recent research that suggests that may not necessarily be that helpful, and it's certainly not what we're trying to do in the LifeQuest groups. I tell people you're allowed one meltdown per quarter because maybe you've got something really painful and the first time you talk about it, maybe you do break down and we do end up spending the whole group with you. But if you are at the place in your life where you need to do that every week, then we're probably not what you need. You probably need counseling or some other kind of a more professionally supervised group. And certainly it's not a venting group. Got to make real clear, number six, this is not a therapy group. Trained counselors may sometimes be present at LifeQuest, but journey groups are not therapy groups. They're sharing, learning, and support groups. We should respect and follow our group facilitators as they facilitate the discussion, but we should not expect to receive therapy. I read in the Hannaford book that we probably ought to be getting people to sign releases to that effect, that say they know they're not getting professional therapy, because that's not what this is. This is Christian support, okay? And then number seven, we're not all at the same point on the journey. Sometimes you may have already traveled the ground that is being discussed on a particular night. If that is the case, don't object. Consider that it may be helpful to you to travel the ground again. Regardless, you may be able to help some of your traveling companions through that part of the journey. Give you an example of that. Maybe one of the early touchstones that we talk about is that if you don't get all the love you need when you're growing up, that's going to hurt, and you need to come to grips with that. So you're in this group, and that's the subject of the night, but you've already worked through that. Well, don't sit there and cross your arms and say, well, I already went through that. Maybe you need to go through that again. Maybe you need to go through that a little deeper. And by all means, you can understand what other people are sharing when they talk about that. So wait for one another, if you will. Okay, so those are the guidelines of the group. And the facilitators do need training. And again, that Hannaford book over there, the smaller one, is a book that provides training stuff in it. And we're using some of that now. You can find all kinds of stuff for training. But it is important to know that you are a group facilitator and not a group teacher. It's not like, well, this person shares, so you are the group leader and you have to tell them what they need to do. The group facilitator is intended to facilitate the functioning of the group by helping people follow the guidelines. So if somebody does talk too much, the facilitator's got to be able to help deal with that. If they won't respond, they've got to talk to them after the group and say, man, you got a lot of good stuff to share here, and I appreciate that, but we really need to give everybody a chance. Can I ask you to cut back a little bit? the group facilitators will sometimes come to me and say, Marvin, during the introduction at 7 o'clock next week, would you hit that guideline number 4 really hard, or whatever one they're having trouble with? So there's some ways of doing that. There's all kinds of good small group material. Most small group facilitation material applies to what we're doing as well. Not necessarily teaching small groups, but if it is facilitating, it applies pretty well. So they are going to need that kind of training. They're going to need to know the guidelines, because they're going to be, you know, trying to encourage people to follow the guidelines. They're going to need those skills. And then one other thing that they really need is to deal with their own baggage. There's a basic principle when you're trying to help people that you don't want to hurt people. And if you're not aware of your own pain and your own baggage, then you may be motivated by that to do some things in the group that will end up hurting other people instead of helping them. For example, if you're a perfectionist like me and you're not aware of that, you may try to fix somebody to make them more perfect for your own sake, but in your attempt to fix them, you may rush God's work with them and end up hurting them instead of helping them, and that would be because you haven't really dealt with your own baggage. We do believe the same thing that's been said a couple of times this week, that it's God's job to fix people. Our job is to love people. And God's told us some of the things that we need to pass along to people in appropriate times and appropriate ways, but the groups are really about loving people and accepting people and supporting people. Okay, I know a lot of you have some experience in this stuff, so I want us to spend the rest of our time. I think I've got two questions there. Let's talk about these. What have some of you learned about creating safe groups to help people share their wounds? And what else have you learned about effective groups in general that's worth repeating for everybody else? Yes, sir. Absolutely, yeah. We touched on that just a little bit, but your point about going first is very well taken. On some weeks, on some of these travel guides, you know, the facilitator needs to do that and say, man, we got a tough one tonight, and I'm going first. The part of this that's hardest for me is, you know, and they jump in there with theirs first. Very good point. Yeah. Yeah. So you don't rip that scab off? Yeah. Okay, another very good point. Be patient. People have to do this by choice at their own pace. And if you make them feel like they've got to do it at a certain time, that's going to be destructive instead of helpful. I totally agree. Okay, who else? What have you learned about creating safe places and or just about groups in general? Yeah, yeah. That's right. It is a journey. It's not something that's going to be solved easily, and probably, you know, people are going to need some kind of support for a long, long time. But again, you can't force that. You know, we tell people what we're doing, and if they're ready to do it, you know, we sign them up. But we do get people that drop off, and then we'll recontact them maybe to see if they want to come again later or whatever. So you kind of have to fight with a tension between, yeah, you got to stay with this and it's going to take a long time, but if you're not ready, you know, you just really can't do it. So kind of a tension there between those. Okay. I'll answer all of what I hear you saying. Our groups are 90 minutes each week. And the first 30 is all of us together in one place, either with me teaching, or maybe somebody says they want to tell their story, and we'll let them tell their story. We'll screen that a little bit. And then the next hour is in the groups. What we've done so far is we've done two sessions where people work through these travel guides. The first time we had 12 of those, and so it was 12, 13, 14 weeks, because sometimes people would spend 2 weeks on one. We reduced it down to 10. This last time, and so it was about 10 weeks long. We had some discussion about, well, if you don't really finish, should you do the same lesson again? And we kind of said, you're never really going to finish anyway, so maybe it's best to move on unless you really, really feel like you didn't get there. So we try to keep them in about that 10 to 12 week range. We recently decided, instead of running it in blocks of 10 or 12 weeks here, here, here. We're just going to run it constantly and feed new people in whenever they come. And they'll probably start up a new group. So groups will be running concurrently, starting and stopping at all different times. As far as when you get a sense that you're beginning to solve problems, that's real hard to measure. I've got a couple of handouts over here you guys may want to pick up that might help with that. This one talks about what LifeQuest is, and this was the when we had 12 touchstones, and you can read those and kind of get a sense of what the subject is that might be helping solve problems, but it also kind of depends on if that's where the person is or not. You know, just because they had the lesson on it doesn't mean that they really got it. So I think it's the, as someone said, I went through these groups and God peeled another layer off of me. Not so much he fixed me, but he, you know, we made a little progress. So it's kind of hard to say, you know, at week 7 you should be doing better. Does that help at all? I mean, it's just the truth. Yeah. Yeah, what we do, you're holding in your hand, number one. So when we start a new session, we'll all get together and we'll talk about what this is all about and we'll all get one of those. We go home and work on it during the week. And then when we come back together, we'll have a big session. Then we'll go to our groups, and that's what you'll talk about in your group that week. And you may not answer all the questions, or you might. You may feel the need to do it again the following week, or you might go on and get number two. I just brought one of those for a sample. So, okay, good questions. Let me clarify on the first one. And again, I'm not pushing this program. We're building this program, and we're seeing if it's going to work. And maybe it'll give you some ideas about how you could do one if you want to do that. But as far as coming in any time, if I've started a group and they're on week 6, I'm probably not going to add you to that group, not only because you've missed a bunch, but also because of the rapport and the trust that they've established. Group, you know, if you come in like week 2, we might do that or whatever. But if you come in on week 6, we might put you in a kind of a holding group until we get enough people to start a new one. Or we might pull a couple of veterans out of a group and start a new one. So that's how we would handle that. And your other question was?
Once I've done all the touchstones.
Oh, okay. Some people will do them again, and then we're going to offer, hate to call them advanced groups, but maybe specific groups. This is all kind of the general emotional hurt and God can help you kind of stuff. But we might do advanced, we're working on doing advanced groups on relationships or grief or divorce or things like that. And the Chuck Hannaford people have some booklets on some of these. We are trying hard not to do alcohol and drugs. We have a recovery ministry, so if a person has a substance abuse, they'll go there. And there's a couple of reasons for that. There's a lot of overlap, a lot of similarities. But if people, I'm just going to say this. If regular people like us perceive that this is a group for people with really bad problems, then we're not going to show up. But we still got that stuff going on inside, and we need a place where we feel like we can go and get help with the kind of stuff that we've got going on. At the core is that we've all been wounded and God can help us heal. I don't know that he totally heals us in this life. But if I'm hurt because I didn't get the love I need, then God loves me like no other, and God's people will show me that love. And the occasion of all this is outreach. We want this to be something that people who don't know God can relate to because they feel the need, because they feel the hurt, or they feel the symptoms that they produce in their lives because of the hurt. And we want that to be a connection point where we can bring them in and let them experience God's love. Of course, immediately you recognize that there's a lot of people who are already God's people, had the same stuff going on that had never been treated. And I mentioned, I don't know, were you here yesterday in this one? I mentioned yesterday, a lot of the problems you have in the church, I'm convinced, are from hurt people, you know, kind of acting out. There's a book called Hurt People, Hurt People. You know, and I think that's what happens a lot at church. So I think we, you know, a bunch of us need that, Christians and non. But that's kind of the core. And you might pick up those sheets. They might help with that a little more. Well, my strategy was, let's do it in the church first. And if you know somebody, you know, outside the church, bring them, and let's get a core of people that want to do it to be facilitators and stuff before we open it up big. And we're about to get ready to try to open it up to the community. And we'll do that. We'll publicize it in a couple of different ways. We'll probably put it on the church sign, you know, some kind of a teaser thing. We'll put it on the website, probably make our own website. But I think the best thing is going to be if you've been through it and it helped you and you know somebody at your neighborhood or at work, you know, tell them about it, give them a little card or something. It's nwchurch.us. nwchurch.us. And I did not put that on the sheet. I apologize. Okay, anything else? I was going to see if you had any questions, but I think we're out. There's a couple of books you can look at and some more sheets you can pick up if you want to. Tomorrow we're going to talk about making the church a place where people can find mercy, not related to these programs, but other than programs like these, people finding mercy in the church. So appreciate you being here. Have a good rest of the day.